This episode of The Orb is brought to you by Audible.com, offering more than 180,000 titles for smartphone, tablet, and desktop. To get a free audiobook of your choice and help Trek FM at the same time, visit audibletrial.com/trekfm. And also by Enterprise in Space, an international program of the nonprofit National Space Society. Find out how you can help science and education and become a virtual crew member aboard the NSS Enterprise Orbiter by visiting enterpriseinspace.org. And if you want to join the conversation and share your thoughts on this episode, join the Babel Conference, our listeners group on Facebook. Just type Babel, B-A-B-E-L, into the Facebook search field. We look forward to seeing you there.
This is J.G. Hertzler, General Martalker on Deep Space Nine, and you're listening to Trek FM.
Welcome, Niners, to another episode of The Orb, our dedicated Deep Space Nine show. I'm Christopher Jones, and with me, as he always is my esteemed co-host, Matthew Rushing. Matthew, you are really rocking the beard today.
I am, Chris. Although you may not be familiar with this version of Matthew, I am a little bit different. Not only am I rocking the beard, but I'm also really into leather pants. So,
you know, it's true. And to be honest here, the reason I pointed out the beard is that I didn't really want to make you feel uncomfortable about that skin tight black leather suit that you're wearing. I mean, I honestly, Matthew, this is an audio medium, but for me, it's visual in the meeting. And I have to say, it's a little bit inappropriate what you're wearing today.
Well, I mean, this is just what's normal in my universe. And so I'm sorry to have offended you. But Chris, please, please, please try to refrain yourself from like pushing your universe's morals on me. We're not from the same universe, okay?
I will try. All right. So,
folks, I'm not wearing black leather. I'm wearing a black Star Trek t-shirt, though. That's it. Nothing crazy, nothing. We're just kidding.
We're just kidding. But we are going to talk about the Mirror Universe today, hence the opening. But before we do that, Matthew, it's been a long time since we've recorded an Orb, and I'm really glad to be back. Finally, my schedule has changed after 3 years, and it is once again possible for me to podcast. So we are going to be bringing the Orb back on a regular basis.
Well, I'm thinking if this was a visual medium, I would share that GIF I have of Taylor Swift dancing right now, because that's how excited we all are, Chris.
Very good. All right. So, as I said, we're going to talk about the Mirror Universe, and we've decided to do this series right now because, of course, Star Trek Discovery made the Mirror Universe a really big part of the first season, especially the second half of the first season. Now, we're not going to be talking about Discovery. We might touch on it just a little bit. But we wanted to go back to that time when the Mirror Universe first made its reappearance in Star Trek many, many years after Kirk went over in Mirror Mirror. And as we find out in DS9, Matthew, he kind of screwed things up a little bit.
Yeah. What I really liked about the way that they introduce this and they bring us into the universe is that they fully connect us with the story that happened in Mirror Mirror. And it is interesting that we never, ever got a Mirror Universe story before this. And I was even doing some reading, some research today, and Michael Piller talked about how, you know, they had batted back and forth about the idea of doing this in TNG, you know, going back to the Mirror Universe. And he kind of always fought against it, he said. But by the time they got to Deep Space Nine, he couldn't stop thinking about what had happened. So to realize that Kirk's ultimate betrayal of the Prime Directive, telling another universe basically what to do, and then following that advice and causing the collapse of entire society and just, you know, rewriting the entire quadrant. Yeah, you would talk about Kirk throwing out the rule book, the Prime Directive just flying behind him. I think this may be the biggest violation of that he ever made, honestly.
It could be, but Matthew, remember one thing that's very important, as we talked about many, many times on the Ready Room. In the original series, the Enterprise flies around and they go from planet to planet, and Kirk goes down and he tells people what they should do. He messes up their society and then he leaves. A Taste of Armageddon is a great example. Hey, you two planets, you know, you're fighting this little digital war. Well, I think you should actually start killing each other for real. So I'm going to destroy your computers, so if you want to fight, you're going to have to use real bombs. I hope you're ready, because I'm leaving. You figure it out. But of course, trailing the Enterprise is always the Starfleet cleanup ship that comes in and cleans up the mess.
Yeah, the USS Broomsweep.
Right, yeah. The USS Broomsweep comes in and cleans up Kirk's mess. But in this case, the crew of the Broomsweep, they were not there during the lightning storm. And so there was no one to clean up the mess that Kirk created in the Mirror Universe.
It's very true. I mean, and it's hard to get over there. You know, the Department of Temporal Investigations didn't want anything to do with this one. They were like, you know what? It's in another universe. It doesn't concern us. We're good. But what's fascinating about it is for all the joking aside, Kirk is doing what he thinks the society needs, and true. Yet what he doesn't realize, and this is what I found fascinating in doing the research today, was the writers behind this episode were talking about how and why what they ended up basing this on, specifically like the Empire of Rome. Rome is the way it is because it's surrounded by the barbarians.
Right.
And so a lot of influence on what, you know, your society is has to do with what's around you. And it kind of creates this, you know, whole milieu. And Kirk not understanding the milieu of the Mirror Universe, which, say that three times fast, is what leads to this problem. And what I think is fascinating is to watch Deep Space Nine pick up this mantle and say, you know, we're going to continue with this story. Now, I don't know if they had any idea how far they'd go with the Mirror Universe, but what I think it's great, and what it really shows, too, on top of everything else, is that how Deep Space Nine really is the spiritual successor to the original series. We're going to pick up their questions and we're going to, you know, move forward with them. But it does the same thing with TNG too. It picks up the questions that it left and it runs with those. And so Deep Space Nine is really a show about exploring all the questions that these other two shows had created up to that point. And I think this dipping our toe into a whole other universe again, they get the opportunity to do that. And I'm so glad that they did, because it doesn't, by the time we get to the end of the series and we've watched all of them, it doesn't feel like a gimmick.
Right.
It feels like they're really exploring the repercussions of, you know, Kirk's, you know, transfer. And of course, you know, at this point, the Enterprise episodes of Nimir Darkly, those are so lovingly crafted, you can still work in those repercussions of you know, our technology sliding over to their universe and having a major impact as well. So
right.
Even before Kirk got there, the Prime universe had a major impact on that universe. Mm-hmm. So what's great is that the Enterprise writers didn't ruin anything that had come before that we had gotten with Deep Space Nine, and it kind of actually really enhanced. So that's kind of neat.
Yeah. Of course, listeners to the network know that I'm not the biggest fan of Intermirror Darkly on Enterprise.
But, But you are a big fan of Empress Hoshi.
I am a big fan of Empress Hoshi, yes. That is true. But I know what you're saying about those episodes, and I think it's true. And what you say about DS9 answering the questions from the original series and even from the Next Generation, a lot of that is because of the format of the show. Now, when we get to crossover near the end of season 2, DS9 hasn't yet established its serial nature yet. It's still more of an episodic series than the serialized story that we know later. But nevertheless, I feel like it had already created a world that was so much richer than the world that we got on The Next Generation, and certainly the original series, that allowed it to pick up something like this and flesh it out in the way that it did. Because one thing that stands out to me about crossover is that the way that they pluck this fan favorite from the original series, just one episode, which we had never gotten anything else about prior to this, except for Diane Carey's Dark Mirror novel, which was, I believe, right around the same time as this, in fact. DS9 took that and addressed it in terms of what happened during this roughly 100 years after Kirk convinced Mirror Spock to pursue an agenda of peace. Because that was sort of it was like a throwaway in the original series. Like, it seemed like the right thing to do. Hey, don't be barbarians. Don't be evil. You know, create a better society for your people, and you will reap the benefits of that on a galactic scale, pretty much. I mean, that's sort of the message that Kirk gives them and that Spock follows. But then we find out that, yeah, it really didn't work out.
Yeah, I think that's something that is interesting too, because part of that as well is the difference in kind of what we know of science, you know, even, you know, in Deep Space Nine's time period, but now, you know, and the whole idea of multiple universes theories, and that's kind of a big thing, and that they might be slightly different than each one. And so, you know, it's not as much a thing, except for maybe in science fiction at that point. And so the idea of the kind of the repercussions that might have if you came in and told the leader of the biggest, you know, galactic power, oh, you need to change, you know, like, mm-hmm. that might have massive, awful repercussions, doesn't necessarily come into the writer of, you know, an episode then as it might now. So I think it just... What they do, though, on Deep Space Nine is they take that idea and they run with it as if it's kind of a reality. You know, like, I like that. They treat the original series with respect in that, that, you know, Kirk had good intentions, but it turned out badly. Mm-hmm. It's kind of also nice that Kira doesn't know who Kirk is.
Exactly. Yeah. I love that moment because I remember the first time that I saw this episode, and when the attendant asks, do you know the name Kirk? First of all, hearing the name Kirk on DS9, I was like, wow, this is cool. And then with Kira saying, no, never heard of him. That was great too, because unlike making it purely fan service, which is one reason that I'm not a big fan of In a Mirror Darkly, because it just feels like it's like fans having fun running through the mirror universe. Here, we have one of our main characters saying, I have no idea what you're talking about.
Yeah, and I think that's something that, you know, the concept of Deep Space Nine using the mirror universe, it makes more sense, I think, in a lot of ways, because, you know, a lot of people always, especially at the beginning of the show, made reference to the fact that they don't go anywhere, but having a more stationary setting allows you to kind of more deeply explore things. And, you know, I thought it was really interesting in this crossover episode to have, you know, Kira and Bashir be the ones who get to visit. Because, one, they're an unlikely pairing, mm-hmm. which I always enjoy those, especially in early Deep Space Nine.
But Matthew, I'm really glad that they were finally doing that.
Yeah, I am too. I am too. You know, just so they can, you know, create more problems. So I thought that that was really interesting because it's a way to bring those two characters who she doesn't like him and he can't realize that she doesn't really like him because Bashir is oblivious at that point.
Who wouldn't like him, Matthew? You know, from his perspective, who wouldn't like him?
Who doesn't like Bashir from his perspective? But I... yes.
Are you feeling relaxed really... now, Matthew?
Yeah, I'm so relaxed. Mm-hmm. But what I love is that this is one of the things that will help kind of bridge that gap, you know, and create two characters who will be closer now because of their experience here.
Right.
And what a way to shake you up. I mean, you know, for Bashir, he wanted to go to the wilderness. And man, does he end up in the wilderness ever? And for Kira, I think it's a way of seeing that, you know, because she approaches it as, what can I learn from this? Mm-hmm. Which I think is fascinating. Like, is there anything I can learn from this side? Because her Bajor does need to be stronger. And they, you know, the second season, we've gone through the Circle trilogy and everything, you know, like, terrible things have happened there on her planet and just seem to continue to happen. So there are two perspectives. I thought it was just, it's such a well-constructed episode and using the mirror universe as a catapult for character growth was great. But then, of course, we just get to be in the mirror universe and find out what happened, which the you know, 2 minutes of explanation that they intended to get, I think are great. You know, it's all we need and it sets the stage for where we are and where we're going to be going. Mm-hmm. It's awesome.
Let me ask you this question. When you saw this for the first time, and I'm trying to remember. So I watched it in first run and you saw it later, right?
I think I saw this one in first run, but I honestly can't remember.
Okay. Well, my question is, the first time you saw it, did you think of it as, oh, here's a fun and interesting one-off visit to the mirror universe for DS9? Or did you think they might do something with it as they ultimately did and give us multiple episodes and tell this long-running story in that universe?
I don't know if I ever thought about it. I think even then my thought, just kind of trying to think back to then, would have been, oh, it'd be interesting if they go back there. But I don't know if they ever will, you know, because the original series didn't. So, you know, maybe this just is a one-off thing. But at the same time, I do feel like even then, you know, you do leave that kind of open-ended for the mirror universe, you know, like, so it does leave you with a taste of the mirror universe. And now I just kind of feel like a Starship Troopers. Do you want to know more?
So let's talk about the characters a bit, Matthew. We don't get to see all of our characters in this first episode, and we don't see Bashir's counterpart. But of course, we do see Kira's counterpart in the Intendant. We see Garrick. We see Odo, Quark, Miles, and Sisko. And how do they differ from each other? Kira in particular, as sort of the main person that we see because she's running the station, I kind of feel like she is different in one way and not different in another. But how do you see her personality between the Intendant and Major Kira?
The biggest one that I see is her use of sexuality as manipulation.
Mm-hmm.
In that she, you know, she knows what she looks like and she uses that to her full advantage. And the fact that instead of really being sold out to any cause, she's sold to herself.
Yeah.
And you get that, I think, immediately from this character, like that the only thing she truly cares about is herself. And therefore, part of her making sure that she is in a position of power or taken care of is to use every means necessary, and she happens to be a beautiful woman, and therefore she will also use that and has no qualms about it. I mean, obviously, she you know, she gets out of the bathtub and doesn't really care who sees her. So, you know, and I think that makes for a really interesting juxtaposition against our Kira, who is somebody that we haven't necessarily seen in that light yet. We will see her soften throughout the series and mm-hmm. see her in more romantic or those kind of things. But Kira doesn't seem to be somebody who's ever, because of the background she's had, I don't want to say cared too much, but I mean, she just, her sexuality isn't at the forefront of who she is as a character, because she hasn't been able to have the freedom to feel like she can express it, because there are more important things like being alive.
Right. Well, and maybe she doesn't want to express it. You see how uncomfortable absolutely. She is in some of those moments with Jadzia, where they're in a situation, sauna, towels, things like that, where, you know, Jadzia loves it and Nerys is a bit uncomfortable in that situation. What I see between the characters, like a character trait that's the same in both of them, but it manifests itself differently, is the confidence and the strength of character for both, in that Major Kira has the same strong identity and confidence as the intendant, but she uses it for a very different thing. For Major Kira, it was fighting for her people and facing great adversity and never losing faith in herself and learning to be strong and to take care of herself and to lead others. And then the intendant has that same quality, but of course she's using it to oppress others. And as you say, focus very much on herself and her own needs and her own pleasures. I guess that also plays into her dedication to something. But with Major Kira, we're talking about her dedication to the Bajoran faith and to her people. And in the case of the intendant, it's her dedication to the alliance and to running the station and making sure that the goals of the alliance and the rules and such are upheld.
Yeah, and insofar as that, the alliance benefits her.
Yeah.
So
you feel she doesn't actually care about the alliance.
Oh, no, I don't think she cares about the alliance at all, because, well, and I'm referencing later episodes this arc, the Mirror Universe arc. But so I think you can see that she's somebody who uses people to get what she wants and to be adored. You know, you can see that. She even says it to Kira, I want people to love me, especially you. You know, like she's enamored with the idea that people should love her. You know, so I think that's the thing again too. Kira doesn't care if people love her at all. She just wants to help other people.
Right, like, that's
again,
true.
It's not about Kira.
Yeah, exactly. That's a great point about her telling Major Kira that I want you to love me, because it is the ultimate in narcissism, right? She wants herself. She wants to be loved by herself in a very
She wants to be loved by the mirror.
Yeah, in a very literal way. And yeah, her personality, it is the ultimate of someone who rises to power, who is a leader of, I mean, she's not a leader of an empire here. She's just the intendant of this station. But because of the location of the station, she feels like she has her own little kingdom there. And she's at the top of it. And she's going to be completely self-indulgent. But I do see that at the core of both of these characters, the traits are very similar and they just manifest themselves in a different way.
Yeah. And it's interesting because I don't know if you feel this way, but I didn't really see Garrick as being all that much different.
No.
I just felt like it was like the worst version of Garrick from our universe where there's no restraint.
I think it's the version of Garrick from our universe who was never exiled.
I could see that. Yep.
It's just that. You know, he is Garrick. So I don't really have much to say about him. He's just Garrick.
Yeah.
Who never became a tailor.
Yeah, and what's funny is that I also feel like Odo is very much the Odo that we see in flashbacks when he's working for the Cardassians, and that if that had always continued, that kind of reign, mm-hmm. that Odo would have never really changed. I feel like Odo's change in the Prime universe came from his... meeting the Bajorans, somebody mm-hmm. like Kira, and then, of course, the Federation and his understanding of right and wrong. And, I mean, that's something that he even then carries on to the Great Link when all that stuff happens, too, in Deep Space Nine. But I just feel like this is the Odo who kind of got stymied in that this is how... I mean, there is nothing different in this galaxy because in the Mirror Universe, it's all just about power. You know, might makes right. It's the ultimate expression of that idea. So this Odo never sees the need to make any change because that's just the law of this universe, basically.
Right. And he has said before that in our universe, that is what he cares about, right, is the law and upholding the law. Odo, for me, not only in the Mirror Universe, but in the Prime Universe, Odo is very malleable. He will adapt to what, yeah, right, it's no pun intended, but it's very true. He will adapt to whatever environment he finds himself in. That's why he was able to be the head of security on Terok Nor under Dukat. And we saw him do the things that he did at that time in those flashbacks. And it feels to me like that's his default state, is very stern, very serious, whatever he sees as being the rules, whatever rules have been mm-hmm. set for him to uphold, he will ruthlessly uphold those rules. That is Odo's default state. And for Odo to be different, as we see him in most of DS9, working on the station with the Federation and with the Bajorans, requires him to put forth a bit of effort not to fall back mm-hmm. into that default yeah. state. And I feel it's that way for him. For most of the series, I think once his relationship with Kira really starts to blossom, maybe that changes a bit and a more understanding, softer Odo becomes the norm. But this Odo to me is not so much a mirror Odo as much as it is just default Odo.
Yeah. Well, and it's funny because then on the other side, you have this Quark from this universe, and he seems to be very different. Yeah. He's much more altruistic when it has nothing to do with something that's going to gain him. Like, he really seems to care about people, and I feel like, I don't know if they're tipping their hand too early about where they're going to take Quark in the rest of the series, you know, that he's going to become more like this. But yeah, this Quark is really somebody who he has some more of those almost like Federation type values, wanting to help people regardless of what's going to happen to him. And he dies for it, you know, mm-hmm. like this idea. Of course, he doesn't want to die, but he still was willing to die. And I really appreciate that. I mean, yeah, he gets the crud beat out of him and, you know, gives up names. But, you know, I don't think Ferengi are probably good with torture in any universe. So,
yeah. Well, one thing that stands out, of course, is that he's not flamboyant. He wears very drab clothing. But talking about his personality and his desire to help others, one difference I see, however, is that in the Prime Universe, he becomes more that way. He becomes more, even though he doesn't want to admit it, he becomes more caring of his friends and those around him, and he does try to help people. And he's influenced by especially the Federation crew members who, that's sort of their worldview. I mean, that's the worldview of Starfleet and the Federation on the basic level, is to try to help others. And so he's influenced by that. In this Mirror Universe, I feel like Quark is that way because he's scared, because some things have happened to him in the past, which we haven't seen, that have caused him to be very timid, and also caused him to feel sympathetic towards others who he sees being abused by the Alliance. And that's a little bit different than just simply wanting to help people because you feel like it's the right thing to do.
So if we had just given them a keg of root beer, maybe we could have won the Mirror Universe over without any bloodshed. You know, just leave some kegs of root beer.
It all comes back to root beer, Matthew.
It really does. Yeah. It really, yeah.
It's insidious.
What is kind of fascinating is how the character of Miles really isn't all that different.
No, he's not.
And yeah. And what's really interesting is especially, you know, Deep Space Nine is going to play around with Miles quite a bit, where they put him in positions where he is almost like this. I think of the one where Hard Time, where he's in prison, things like that, where you see Miles really broken down. And yeah, the characters are not that much different, at least in this episode. There may be some more differences as we move forward, but what we see here is very similar. The guy who loves to tinker with things, and he wants to do the right thing, but, you know, maybe he's just not got the guts yet.
Yeah, that's how I read him, too. The most important element being is that both Smiley and Miles are honorable men who want to do the right thing. And the difference between them is the environment that they're put into. So Miles in the Prime Universe is put into a situation where he can thrive, and Miles/Smiley in the Mirror Universe is put in a situation where he has no opportunity to do that. But they're essentially the same person, certainly in this episode as we see them portrayed in Crossover.
Well, and I think that what's interesting is that Sisko is the one who's the most, I think, fascinating as a character, because there are bits and pieces that are similar.
Yeah.
But then there are pieces that are different. And I have to say, besides Nana Visitor, I think that Avery Brooks does the best of making you just not sure what to think of the Mirror Universe version, especially in this episode. Like, even by the end, there's still that strange glint in his eye that you can't figure out. And maybe that's just Avery Brooks in general.
Well, that's what I was thinking. And there's that laugh and that smile.
Yes.
And
yes.
I'm just thinking, like, somebody give him a Mirror Universe piano. Sit him down at that piano. Because we've got...
It'd be just 20 minutes of him, like, jazzing and, like, riffing on things and talking about things you wouldn't necessarily be sure what was being said. Yeah.
Because some of the looks he gives and some of the laughs and the little head jerks and such in this episode, they just remind me of that Avery Unleashed that we get in The Captains, and it's fun to watch.
Mirror Universe, Avery Unleashed.
Avery Unleashed. And it's fun to watch, but it's a little bit weird, and you just don't quite know what to think.
Well, it's unnerving, too. Like, it kind of makes you uncomfortable, which right. is perfect for the Mirror Universe.
Yeah. Exactly. So, we'll talk more about Sisko as we go along through this series. But in this episode, yeah, it was interesting.
And I think that, you know, what was nice is that they waited till the second season, so you had a better understanding of who the characters were.
Right,
so that when we got to the Mirror Universe, you could pick up on these nuances.
Yeah.
And again, I do think all of the actors did a good job of portraying themselves in the Mirror Universe versions and making them different enough or similar enough, but with a weird quirk, you know, it really worked. But one of the things that I kind of, you know, we're doing this series because we were thinking about, you know, Discovery using the Mirror Universe. And so the question, and you talked about how you aren't a huge fan of the Enterprise episodes. So do you feel like the Mirror Universe then can be overused?
Yeah. Up until Discovery, of course, I never felt that way because we did not get any Mirror Universe in TNG. And in DS9, although we did visit five times, it was roughly once per season after the second season. There's one season where we don't have an episode. And it was used to tell a story that was self... I was going to say it was self-contained, but we do have a lot of crossover back and forth. And we have Resurrection, where we've got people coming over, or we've got Burrell coming over to Hours, and it takes place in Hours. But they also used it in DS9 to tell an alternate history of Sisko's life and Jennifer, and they got Jake involved on our side of it, which was really interesting. So they did it with purpose, but they didn't go to the well too often. And speaking of Jake, I just have to say this because you would almost think that Cliff Bull conceived of this whole thing, because Sirach Lofton does not appear in this episode. But more than that, Jake was never born in this mirror universe. So it's like the ultimate, it's like the ultimate cliffing of Sirach Lofton, that not only do you not appear in this episode, you were never born. But anyway, back to your question, though. Can it be overused? I think it can certainly be overused. The problem with the mirror universe is that it can very easily become a gimmick. And that's where I feel that Enterprise stepped into a trap a bit. That Intermirror Darkly, those two episodes, I'm not going to say that they feel like a gimmick per se, but as I said earlier, they did feel more to me like fans saying, wow, we have an opportunity to go play in the mirror universe. And even though our show is set 100 years before that, we can recreate the bridge, and we can recreate the costumes, and we can pretend like we're in the original series, and it's going to be glorious. And it doesn't matter if we tell a cohesive story. Because what I remember about In a Mirror Darkly is getting to the end of the second episode and going, okay, so what was this story? And maybe if Enterprise had continued for seven seasons, I wouldn't feel that way, because they could have revisited the way DS9 did, and they could have told more about what happened after they got the Defiant and Hoshi became the Empress. But because they didn't, I didn't quite feel that way.
Yeah, I didn't feel that way with the Enterprise episodes, mainly because I felt as though they really respect the canon.
Mm-hmm. That's true.
In those episodes, they know they can't have our characters cross over. Mm-hmm. And so what they do is they just tell a story in the mirror universe, right, at that time period. And the way they weave it all in, and the way they even respected, you know, TOS with the Defiant disappearing, and well, now we answer where all that kind of stuff. It's like, this is fan service. I felt like in the way that fan service should be done, in the sense that we're tying all these things together. Yes, these two episodes, you can remove them from the Enterprise that season, and it wouldn't make a difference,
because they don't take place in our universe.
Right. They don't take place in our universe.
In the mirror universe. Yeah.
Right. And that's, but I can let that go, because they were enjoyable episodes, I felt like, and they're crazy and they're fun, and there's nothing wrong with that. And I think they would have found a way to maybe get an opportunity to visit there maybe one or two more times if they continued to go.
Yeah, I think so.
More seasons, and it would have helped. But I think even this being the first taste of how those things happen, again, the respect for which they pay all of these things, I think, is the thing that helps me feel more comfortable. The only thing in that, and this is totally an Enterprise Warp 5 thing, but I'm going to step on their toes for just a second, I'm going to say, the only thing I wish is that we had had more seasons, because when you watch those two episodes and there's not much more of Enterprise left, it's kind of a and then of course, well, I mean, there's the travesty of an episode of the you know, the final episode of, right. of Enterprise that shall not be named. That's the only thing that hurts those two episodes. But in and of themselves, it's like a great, I mean, it could be a great standalone, almost like spinoff series, you know, which would have been kind of cool. So, whereas, you know, can it be overused? You know, I think I'd argue that, you know, Discovery being so close to the original series and Kirk supposing to be the first person who, you know, all that stuff's happened, they still have to explain then how nobody knows about that.
Right.
You know,
right.
And so the idea of being overused, yeah, I feel like it could become like a Section 31 thing, which can also be overused.
Right.
And again, I think Deep Space Nine, bringing it all back, is a good, solid show that shows us how to use these type of things without killing them.
Yeah. Yeah. So, for me, when I think of it being overused, I think that if you went to the well too many times, just for the sake of having fun in the Mirror Universe, that could be overusing it. And I think some people feel that way perhaps about the Deep Space Nine story. I think some fans probably feel that, you know, Crossover is great, Through the Looking Glass, Shattered Mirror. But when you get to the point of like the Emperor's New Cloak, maybe it feels like maybe we've gone there too many times. But we'll find out, because we're going to be discussing that episode. And I don't want to go there yet, so we're going to find out how we feel about it when we get there. As far as Discovery goes, I'm mixed on their use of the Mirror Universe. I think that it was clever to have the captain in Lorca actually be from the Mirror Universe the whole time, and no one knew, although there were indications. So that's kind of an interesting thing, but the way that they spent so much time there in the second half of the first season was perhaps what I would define as overuse. But I think your point earlier of it being so close to Mirror Mirror and what happened there and how it really does rewrite canon compared with what Enterprise did, which steered very far away from rewriting canon.
No, it just supported what was already
It supported canon,
canon
yeah, yeah. Is maybe a difference. Now, of course, they actually used the Enterprise episodes on Discovery because the Defiant is there already, and that's how they tie it all together. So, you know, I don't know. I don't have a definitive answer. I don't have really strong feelings either way about whether you can or cannot overuse it or whether what Discovery did would be considered overuse. But I do think that in Crossover, the way that DS9 picked up the Mirror Universe was the best example of referencing the Mirror Universe and fitting it into the continuity of Star Trek and actually answering a question that fans had for so many years of what happened after Kirk left.
Which, you know, is one of the things that for the most part Deep Space Nine does really well, is answer questions raised by the other series. And I think that's one of the things that both you and I really appreciate about the show, because, I mean, you've got guys here that are complete continuity dudes, you know, I mean, Ira Stephen Baer and Ronald D. Moore and, you know, Michael Piller, you know, all these people, they knew Star Trek, they loved Star Trek. You know, Michael Piller, even being somebody who didn't want to do this for so long because he just didn't want to, you know, like, he didn't want the gimmick, basically, but he couldn't deny he had the question himself. So I love that they did wait till Deep Space Nine to start diving into the Mirror Universe and, you know, dipping into that Mirror Darkly. And I'm excited to continue on with these episodes and see where they go.
Absolutely. So we are going to continue going through this. So the next episode that we do will be about Through the Looking Glass, then Shattered Mirror, then Resurrection,
which,
and then the Emperor's
Kira
New Cloak.
References in this episode, which, so she's read Lewis Carroll, but well, she doesn't know who Kirk is.
Well, but you understand, Matthew, that Kira grew up on Vulcan, and her mother is Amanda, and that's why she knows about Lewis Carroll.
Oh, that makes so much more sense. I thought you were just going to say she grew up on Disney animated films. Because that would actually make more sense.
So we're going to be talking about these. I do want to, in final thoughts here, Matthew, I want to just throw out a few numbers. Because people do wonder, this is from my research when I did Notes from the Edge. We've talked about In a Mirror Darkly, the two episodes on Enterprise, and the five episodes here on Deep Space Nine. Star Trek Continues also did Fairest of Them All, which is actually quite a good episode, which picks up immediately after Mirror Mirror. So if you haven't seen that, I do encourage people to go watch that. I think it's really well done. And then in the literary universe, there are 29 novels, novellas, or short stories that feature the Mirror Universe. And there are also 23 comics and 3 RPG modules. And also 2 video games that take us to the Mirror Universe. So even though we didn't see it on screen after Mirror Mirror until we got to Crossover, there is a lot of stuff in the expanded universe that filled in the gaps and let us play in the Mirror Universe.
Well, that's one of the things that they use specifically in the expanded universe of Star Trek Deep Space Nine when they continue the series, is mm-hmm. when they do Soul Key, they use this specific episode that it's the wormhole, mm-hmm. And that the prophets made this happen on purpose to reconnect the universes. So very clever in that sense. And this is the only time that the wormhole is used for transfer to the Mirror Universe. The rest of it is transporters. So, I mean, it's a great argument that the prophets did have something to do with them transferring to the Mirror Universe because they wanted there to be a change in that universe as well. So I think that's really kind of a fun thing that they end up playing with. But yeah. Even when I think about that just idea here, again, it's not a ton of techno babble. It's the wormhole. It's, you know, it's already a thing we don't understand, so you don't have to do tons of techno babble to get you over there. It's great.
Right. Now, Matthew, do you think that the Mirror Prophets live in a place that's really dark and they understand linear time even better than we do?
Yeah, they kind of live on that planet with Aunt Beast from A Wrinkle in Time.
Okay.
Where it's totally dark, yeah, and they definitely understand linear time perfectly. In fact, they're surrounded by clocks. That's good. So,
and they also love baseball, Matthew.
Not only do they love baseball, but yeah, they're also all wearing Apple Watches so they can keep track of their steps. So,
the first thing they say to each other when they pass each other on the street is, "What time is it?"
Yeah, and how many steps you got?
All right. Well, it's been fun talking about Crossover and the Mirror Universe today, but it's not the only thing we've been talking about here on the network. So here's a quick look at some other things you may have missed elsewhere on Trek FM.
Previously on Trek.fm, the 602 Club.
And it really speaks to me, Halliday's ego even, of I'm going to make everyone love what I love, and then that's how they'll win the contest. You know, and it's sad that it feels like it all became that, what you're saying, Matt, of it, everyone not even having the creativity to have their own stuff anymore. It's all about what Halliday was interested in. And then I think, too, it really also could be even a commentary about greed in society now, that everything really revolved around wanting to get his fortune. So they did all the research they had to do because they just wanted the money.
Warp 5.
Wait, hold on. You don't have a reflection. There's beams of light traversing the ship, cutting you. Mm-hmm. And my lack of logic is what's astounding here?
Yeah, because you made an assumption based on zero evidence.
Except for the fact that they just melted.
Yeah, the three that we've seen, we don't know that what the rest of them are doing. This is the
we
first one.
We don't know if it
seen.
Was anymore.
Okay, let's scan the melting.
Meta Treks.
And do it all over again.
Are you bad-mouthing Voyager?
to a guy who hosts a Voyager podcast?
You know I am. I always love to rib you about Voyager, but they really kind of play that card in this episode. They hit that magic reset button. So.
Take that, you Deep Space Nine-loving, Voyager-hating, reset button-obsessing fans. There's a reset button right here in this episode of Deep Space Nine.
Literary Treks.
But that was also like one of the core ideas of the story before I even knew much about how it was going to develop, was this notion that we could find something to explore that would allow different groups of people to come together to explore it than we're used to seeing.
And that's what else is happening on Trek.fm.
So check out all of these shows and join the conversation about your favorite corner of the Star Trek universe and beyond. You'll find us everywhere you get your podcasts. If you're an Apple user, of course, you'll find us in Apple Podcasts and in iTunes. Be sure to hit the subscribe button on your iPhone, iPad, or Apple TV, or the desktop iTunes app. That way you'll get the latest episode as soon as it's published. And if you have a moment, please leave us a star rating and a written review. If you're not an Apple user, we've got you covered as well. You can find our shows on Google Play Music, Stitcher, TuneIn, Spreaker, SoundCloud, Windows Phone. You can also find us in Spotify now, in iHeartRadio, pretty much any third-party app. And you can go to the website and stream or download the MP3 file from the show page at trek.fm. And Matthew, speaking of iTunes. You know, one thing about us is that because of our schedules, and in particular mine and the health issues and such, we haven't done the Orb in a very long time. And during that time, we have received quite a few iTunes reviews. And so over the next few shows, I would like to just catch us up and acknowledge everyone who has left us a review, going really back to the beginning of 2017. So it's kind of a long time here. So Matthew, we'll read three reviews today, and the first one here is from Davey1701A, who wrote, "A great podcast. This is the jewel podcast of Trek FM, not because Deep Space Nine is the best Star Trek show, it isn't, but because of the quality of the hosts and of the intelligent, thoughtful, substantive discussions that take place on this podcast. Each discussion is head and shoulders above anything else I've heard. I could not recommend it more highly. The only concern is the fact that they can't record as often as I'd like." So, Davey, we're going to fix that now. And we really thank you for your review there. And we're glad that you're enjoying the show. Matthew, I guess you probably disagree, though, with the comment that DS9 is not the best Star Trek series, right?
I mean, you know, to each their own.
Exactly. Okay, our next review is from LSVGS1963, and this person actually left us 2 stars, the last one was 5 stars, and they said, "The insight regarding the characters, their development and growth, and the story arc, for the most part, is entertaining. However, after listening to the first 5 or 6 episodes, I was so bothered by the way one of the hosts was unable to simply say a couple of the characters' names correctly, namely the way he repeatedly called Quark Quirk, and even worse, called Jadzia Janzia. What was even more irritating to me was the one co-host was saying their names correctly, but the other guy kept getting their names wrong, and his co-host never corrected him. For that reason, I had to stop listening." Okay, so I want to address this one because this has come up a few times, and as someone who lives outside of the United States, as someone who speaks multiple languages, and someone who spends their days around people from dozens of countries who speak different dialects of English, for those of you who are bothered by small differences in pronunciation of names, that's not the point of our show. The point of our show is the insight regarding the characters, their development, and the growth of the story arc. The thing about the English language is that there are many, many different dialects, and even within one dialect, people are from different regions of a country, and people have accents. And if you watch any TV show, you're going to see this. And so I'm sorry if it bothers you, and if it means you can't listen, then I'm sorry to hear that as well. But I do understand the reason that we don't correct that is because it's an accent and it's not important. But I do thank you for leaving the review. And hopefully if anyone's listening and you have the same feelings, but you're still listening, I hope you will continue to do so. And Matthew, the other review we're going to read today is a 5-star review from Clay C.M. DS9 rules with 3 exclamation marks. And Clay says, I am so happy you make this podcast. I love DS9, but living in the South, it was hard to find anyone to talk to or watch Star Trek, even though it's a one-sided conversation. It's been great to hear others' views about my favorite Trek show.
That's really cool. You know, I love that people continue to give us reviews, even though we haven't been able to record as much. And it definitely is nice to hear. So I really appreciate that. And, so we say some names wrong sometimes. You know, we're human. Let it go.
We're human, Matthew.
That's right. Exactly. So I just happen to say things Ferengi.
That's right. So. And I do want to say, Clay, it's really not a one-sided conversation. If you're not a member of the Babel Conference, and you may be now because this review was from about 6 months ago, please join the Babel Conference on Facebook, because the reason we have that group is to continue the conversations from the podcasts with our audience. So you can talk to us, and you can also talk to fellow listeners there. Just go to Facebook and type Babel, B-A-B-E-L, if you're not already a member. You'll need to click join. But get in that group. I mean, we have thousands of people in there talking about Star Trek every day. It's a wonderful place, and we don't want this to be a one-sided conversation. So please go over there and do that. In terms of other places you can find us, if you want to find the network, we're on Twitter. Our username is TrekFM. We also have our main Facebook page, facebook.com/TrekFM. And if you want to send us a message by email, you can go to trek.fm/contact, use the form there, choose The Orb as a Show, and that'll come to both Matthew and me. Now, Matthew, when you're not picking out your next great, overly tight outfit, where can people find you?
Well, Chris, you could find me on Twitter, MattRushing02. You just may see pictures. I'm just kidding. Just kidding.
That's
you can find
Instagram,
me on Instagram.
Matthew.
Yeah, under the same name. You can also find me here on the network doing the General Geek Show called the 602 Club, as we talk about all the fandoms we love. We don't just talk about one. We try to cover as many as possible. So it's a lot of fun. I hope you'll check us out there. You can also find me on the Nerd Party Network with John Mills talking about Star Wars with Aggressive Negotiation, which is a blast. And then I'm also doing a show over there called Outpost with Drea Kaufman, where we talk about each and every chapter of the Harry Potter series, one chapter at a time. And then last but not least, I'm doing a show called Cinema Stories with my good friend Courtney, where we talk about films through the lens of faith. But Chris, when you're not getting lost in between the mirrors, where can people find you?
I do that often. But when I'm not doing that, you can find me here on the network doing Notes from the Edge, which is a sub-show of The Edge, our Star Trek Discovery podcast. You can also find me on my main show, The Ready Room, where we talk about all 5 live-action Star Trek series, and we rotate through them. I guess I should say all 6, although we do Discovery differently on there. Usually when we talk about Discovery, it's Larry Nemechek and me just talking about it in general, whereas with the first 5 live-action series, we do individual episodes and we rotate through. So you can find me there. And you can also find my writing about Star Trek on the official website at StarTrek.com. And Matthew, I have an article that should be going up. I think it's going to be around the end of April, that is about DS9 and jazz and why jazz
is
awesome. The perfect musical style, the perfect genre for this show, and why it captures the spirit of DS9 and why DS9 captures the spirit of jazz. So you'll be able to find that over on StarTrek.com. But if you go search for my name, C. Brian Jones, you can find my other articles. There was one published earlier this month in which I actually talk a bit about my eye issue, which has kept me from podcasting for the past couple of years. One other thing I want to share with everyone is how you can help keep The Orb and everything else that we do at Trek FM going. It does cost us quite a lot of money to produce these shows and distribute them. And so if you would like to become part of the team and help us keep this network going, you can do that by visiting Patreon at patreon.com/TrekFM. That's Patreon.com/TrekFM. You can get all the details over there. But we have perks for you, such as our special website, Patron Zone, where we have early episode releases and other content. We also have the Patrons Roundtable, where you can get on mic with one of our hosts and other listeners and talk about Star Trek the same way we do. And we do publish that as a podcast on our network for everyone to listen to. And you can also become an associate producer and help out in other ways. So if you want to find out how, and if you want to contribute, just please go to patreon.com/trekfm. And Matthew, while we're talking about supporting the things that we do, Tristan Riddell, who was a very important part of our network for a very long time, originally host of Hyperchannel, then host of To the Journey. Now he has his own network called The Nerd Party, and of course, you're part of that network as well. The Nerd Party was recently hit with a legal claim. It's a very unfortunate situation, and I can't go into the details, but I will say that the person who filed the legal claim is asking for less than what it would cost for them to go to court, and of course, Tristan and The Nerd Party don't have business insurance. And we're all trying to help Tristan out to take care of this claim so everyone can move forward. And Tristan has set up a GoFundMe and is looking for support from listeners to help cover the legal costs. So if you would like to help Tristan out, please go to GoFundMe.com/TheNerdParty. GoFundMe.com/TheNerdParty. And donate. You know, just as the case with us with Patreon, any amount helps a lot. And we want to help Tristan out. He's a good friend of mine. He was a huge part of what made Trek FM possible and made this network what it is. So go check it out and find out what's going on over there and do what you can to help. And we certainly want to do our part to help Tristan out in this situation.
Absolutely. We really appreciate that, too, over at the Nerd Party. So yeah. Thank you so much, Chris.
Absolutely, absolutely. Well, Matthew, I am so thrilled to be back on the Orb with you, and I'm so glad that we were able to do this episode today, and I cannot wait for our next little trip into the Mirror Universe.
Well, Chris, it's great to be back, and we want to thank you, everyone, for joining us. And we will see you next time as we gaze into the Orb.